Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
We're back. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, how you doing, my friend? You ready to talk about some new releases?
Yeah, happy new mid-year to all you guys.
Ish.
Yeah, whatever.
We're a little late.
Better late than ever.
Donald, how's it hanging, brother?
Good. Excited to shake my moneymaker.
I'm curious how much money you think you could make. Enough to, maybe enough to finance the use of a cart at Aldi. I think that's what, 25 cents?
Wow.
It's something. It's something.
Yeah. All right. This is the Album Nerd Podcast. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, listening, living them. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to be each bringing a new release album that we fancy to the table to discuss. Don's going to be asking us a deep question. Then we're going to have some shout outs to some other albums and album related items that we're digging. And then we'll spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out what we'll talk about next time as we return to the summer of Don. But right now, it's new release time.
That's what I'm talking about!
Yeah, so we are, in fact, pausing the summer of Don to discuss some new releases. So if you've been listening, you know that we've been talking about new records that we've been digging. But this week, we're actually going to go a little deeper, and we're each going to present an album released in 2024.
Yeah, so new releases, right? A bit of a thorn in my side sometimes, but the digging section we do at the end of every episode of the Album Nerds Podcast has definitely helped me keep a better eye on what's going on out there with new albums. I think Andy was fine. Don and I were the ones that struggled. But anyway, yeah, so we're focusing each on one album this week that we really wanted to talk about for the first half of 2024. But I'm sure we considered some other stuff. So why don't we briefly go through a few of the albums that we were really close to picking but ended up going a different direction. So let's do that right now. How'd you guys do?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you guys are enjoying doing your new release homework. Tasked you all with.
Yes.
All right. Well, the first one up here for me is from an artist from London, England. His name is Shabaka. His new album is Shabaka. His name of his record is Perceive Its Beauty, Acknowledge Its Grace. Let's play a little bit of the opening cut, End of Innocence.
Well, that sounded very Chewbacca-y. I thought it'd be a little more aggressive or boop, 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 boop.
No, it's not. Not Star Wars. This is the multi-instrumentalist who on this record primarily focuses on different types of flutes. There's a lot of really great guest spots on this record as well. You got like Moses Sumney, Saul Williams, Lucid, Floating Points all make appearances throughout. It's probably the record I've listened to most this year. It's just a really great vibe, kind of chill. This is largely instrumental, but there are some cool spoken word sections as well.
So is this jazz?
Yeah, I guess I'd say it was primarily jazz, but it's pretty free form in terms of how it's composed, I would say. It feels very, very loose, improvised. All right, another record I want to highlight here is from a West African supergroup by the name of Les Amazons d'Afrique. The name of the album is Moscow Dance. That's how you would say it.
You know, why didn't you just pick John Smith's album, Blue Skies, or something? You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is way more interesting than John Smith's record, personally. But this is the third album from the supergroup, produced by a producer that you guys might recognize as this guy, Jackknife Lee. Does that sound familiar at all to you? Sound like R.E.M., U2.
Yeah.
It sounds cool, but I've never heard of it, but that's a great name.
It's like a WWE name.
That sounds like a wrestler.
Him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan could have been partners.
This is a really cool record, combining some like traditional African sounds and kind of vocal style with like modern kind of electronic style production, but doesn't really lean too heavy in the electronic style, I would say. It has more of like authentic kind of African vibe to it. I really think this record is fantastic. I've listened to it quite a bit. I don't know if I would say it's not really pop music. It's not really dance music. It's kind of, I think world music is probably the best classification for the style, but it's not a hard record to get into. It's only like 35, 40 minutes. It's pretty accessible, I would say.
Yeah. What you got, Don?
Well, I've been slowly processing the record from the Decemberists called As It Ever Was, So It Will Be Again. It's actually a double album, so it's taking me a while to figure it out, but kind of typical of what they do, kind of catchy, melancholy, nerdy, historically informed folk rock. But yeah, actually ends with a 20-minute song, so that's...
Sweet.
Yeah. Oh.
Is there like a theme to this record, Don, or is it kind of scattered?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. I'm like, each song is kind of a different story, so I'm not sure that there is like a unifying theme. Well, here's a song called Long White Veil.
All right, so the album is obviously about getting married. Boom.
Actually, this I think this long white veil is actually on a person in a casket.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. Change things up on you.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. There's a Decemberist for you.
Yeah. And another album I've really been enjoying, thanks to Dude's recommendation, the Brother Brothers.
Yeah.
Their album.
It's a good one.
It's called the January album. One fun song I like, just because I'm a dog person, is a song called Brown Dog.
Brown Dog. You're a good dog. Oh, yeah. Do you have another home?
See, now this is more in that John Smith area we were talking about.
But yeah, I really enjoy the harmonies. I think, as Dude mentioned before, kind of a Simon and Garfunkel vibe on some of it.
Yeah.
And just fun songwriting. Really, really good album. I'm surprised these guys aren't bigger than they are, but maybe soon. Dude?
Yeah, so for my main pick, we're going to get into three albums really in depth or more in depth. It was going to be Pearl Jam Dark Matter. I listened to it a ton of times. I tried. I'm a huge Pearl Jam fan. I have been for whatever, 20 or 30 years, however long they've been around. And this is their 12th studio album, produced by Andrew Watt. And it sounds great overall as an album. I'm just not like moved by it. No, I don't have anything in my head afterwards. Like, I don't have things stuck. But one of the songs that does bring the energy that I'm looking for is Dark Matter, the title track. Just not enough of those moments for me, and I like it, but I don't love it. And I wanted to talk this week about something that I really love and I'm having fun with, and this felt more like homework, unfortunately. So, but it's more of a fan. It's for, I think, fans of Pearl Jam will find things to like about it. I don't know that it would get them any new fans. Then I also reconnected a little bit with the Lunar Effect, Sounds of Green and Blue. We'll play a couple seconds of Pulling Daisies. Now, the reason I didn't focus on this one this week is it's on my short list for favorite of the year, perhaps. Ooh. So maybe save it for the end of the year. We'll see.
Already thinking ahead.
Yeah. This is their second album, released April 12th. Psychedelic rock band from London. I believe they formed in 2016. It's spacey, atmospheric, and trippy. And it's pretty groovy. It's fun to listen to, and we'll see where it goes, but I'm really liking it. All right, so all that being said, we're going to get into it now with the three albums that we really want to focus on for this first half of 2024.
You choose me?
Like, when I have a new song, I'm not sure if it's any good until I've played it for an audience. Mm. And it's not because of verbal validation. It's because of a feeling. And I can always feel if it's connecting or not.
Verbal validation would be a good band name.
Yeah. But it's not a good way to approach songwriting.
It's more about a feeling, guys.
Yes.
You could say it's more than a feeling. Okay. Right, that was indeed Adrienne Lenker of Big Thief fame. We're talking about her sixth solo studio album today. It's called Bright Future. This came out back in March of this year. So Adrienne, if you're not familiar with her, she's the guitarist and principal songwriter of the group Big Thief, who've kind of made a splash maybe over the last 5+ years in the indie folk rock space. This album here, it's a, you know, it's a solo affair. It's pretty stripped down, though it does feature some additional instrumentations and vocals by a few of her friends. I'll talk about that shortly. One interesting note about the production, it was recorded, mixed, and mastered all on analog tape. No digital anything.
Yeah.
That might explain why it sounds warm and real.
That's how we do the Album Nerds podcast.
That's right.
All on analog tape.
That's right.
real over here. They also didn't do any edits, which was kind of surprising. Just like everything's one straight shot. So
it's even better.
It's kind of cool.
Even the Beatles couldn't do that.
God. Yeah. You always try to bring the Beatles into it.
It's not all about the Beatles. All right, let's play the lead single. This is the final cut in the album. It's called Ruined.
Every hour or two, can't get enough of you. You come around, I'm ruined. You come around, I'm ruined.
Yeah, Linker said that track was about the downfall of relationship and the effects of obsessive rumination. It's brought the end to many of my relationships as well.
Yeah, too much rumination. Is that like an energy drink?
I think so, yeah. All right, my clickbait headline for this album is Linker reminds Album Nerd why Big Thief is so popular. I've never really resonated with Big Thief personally, but some of her solo music has really stuck with me. And this one, for whatever reason, just hit me like a truck. And I feel like it's probably my favorite record of the first half of the year so far. I think what stands out to me in this record is just the emotion that she gets to. She's an excellent songwriter. She's able to write some pretty catchy melodies without a whole lot of instrumentation. I think it's just a matter of how she delivers the vocals. But she also gets to like some really touching moments, you know, some intimate things. It's a very personal sounding record, which I always kind of prefer that kind of like more intimate style.
I agree. I mean, the use of like "you did this" or when, you know, like in some of the songs when she's referring to the characters in it, like her mom or someone else, where it's like, "We did this, we made pasta," whatever it is, it feels so real because the way that she's telling the story is like she's talking to the person. I really like that.
Yeah, it feels like she's reliving some memories on this record. Yeah. And I don't know if there's necessarily a specific theme being explored here, but everything she does just kind of has this sparkly intimacy to it, which I think I enjoy quite a bit.
Nice.
Let's play the second track from the album. This is Sadness as a Gift.
You could write me someday and I think you will. We could see the sadness as a gift and still feel too heavy.
That's when I stopped believing in Santa Claus, when all I got for Christmas was sadness. Fuck that guy. You know what I mean?
So that's a lovely ballad. I believe she's playing 12-string guitar on there, and then there's just some piano and violin on the track. You know, basically, I really like the idea of sadness as a gift. I don't know if you've ever, of course, I just
shocking.
But I don't know if you've ever been like kind of grieving about something for a long time. It's like you kind of get used to it, and then when you sort of get over it, you kind of miss it.
Kind of, yeah. You don't have that to rely on anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think I stole that from a movie or something. But.
it was a deep thought.
Yes.
Nonetheless.
So my clickbait headline for this album is, "Yo, Adrian, keep up the poetic songwriting and lovely arrangements."
I thought you were going to do the voice.
Yo, Adrian. Yeah, it's a lovely album. I mean, if there is a criticism, is I found that it wasn't good background music. I don't know if it's just like the nature of her voice or something. Or I mean, I don't know. Some of it can be a little disconcerting at times. But if you're really paying attention and listening to the lyrics, you know, it's a really cool experience.
Yeah, it's definitely more of a headphone record and less of a blast it from your car speaker.
Yeah, it's not a summer picnic type of thing.
That's true. And she doesn't have a beautiful voice, but she has like a dynamic voice that's emotive and effective.
So. Yeah, I think she misses a few notes at times on this record, if I'm being honest. But I think it works. Yeah,
it's kind of like a more raw Tori Amos kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do enjoy the mistakes and the humanity of it, and I think it's that indie spirit.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, that allows that.
And I wonder if I haven't listened to Big Thief much. I mean, I just did this week just to kind of get an idea or just to get some context. But it seems like that stuff is less raw.
Yeah, it's a little more polished, a little more larger sound, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this version of her.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah, I would say the record as a whole feels very organic, just kind of like naturally occurring. Let me play a cut from the middle of the record. This is called Free Treasure.
Love without measure. You're cooking dinner. It's getting around half past ten.
That's what I'm talking about right there. It just seems like, you know, someone having these memories and just so raw sounding. And now that I know that the recording was done so organically, it helps make sense as to why it feels so real.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel rambly, because sometimes when you do that, when somebody's just saying, oh, remember the time you were blah, 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 like it can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a great performance of this song on Fallon, and I was struck by just how emotional it was there, too, with her and another guy on guitars. It explores themes of connection, love, vulnerability. It's gentle and reflective, but it just feels intimate. And I think that's a lot of the songs on this album do. My clickbait headline to describe this: Adrian Lenker sneaks up on you with a pretty unassuming voice, but pounces with relatable images and scenarios until you are awash in memories and emotions.
Wow. Awash in that headline, man. Jeez.
Well, I could have been like, I should have written one to Adrian. You wrote these songs. we made some SpaghettiOs. But it's just one of those albums you sink into and pick up more detail with each listen.
Yeah.
And I'm really a sucker for lyrical detail, kind of like Andy and the we's and the you's and you know, making dinner and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, like Real House, No Machine, Vampire Empire. These are some tracks on the album that really stuck with me. Vampire Empire in particular, a little darker. I love the vocals.
Yeah, that track, I believe, was on the Big Thief record from last year, I want to say.
I don't know the treatment on that one. I'll have to go check it out, but I like it here quite a bit. So yeah, all in all, very much enjoyed it. It was a good listen.
Cool. Glad you guys enjoyed it. I mentioned real quick that the guitar on the last track we heard there is played by a musician by the name of Matt Davidson. The piano scattered throughout is by Nick Hakim, who I think we talked about on the show in the past briefly.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some violin by an artist by the name of Joseph Rutstein. So yeah, well, once again, the primary artist is Adrian Lenker. The album is Bright Future, and that's my pick for the first half of 2024.
Yo, Adrian, it's me, Rocky.
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
If you're enjoying the show, and we hope you are, do us a solid and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. Maybe we made you laugh, or you discovered an album you enjoy. Leaving a review keeps the show going and helps other music fans find us.
We've never been about being cool. That's something quite a lot of people try to do, is to be somehow cool, which is therefore completely uncool because you're trying too hard.
Then they have succeeded.
It's pretty much the ethos of the podcast here.
There's been a lot of foreshadowing. I think that this would be my pick.
Yes. Dude, there's been five shadowing.
You did not pick this record, man. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh.
I mean, we could be at 10 shadowing by now.
All right. So my pick is Pet Shop Boys, Nonetheless, released in April of this year. It's their 15th studio album by the English synth-pop duo made up of vocalist Neil Tennant and keyboardist Chris Lowe. Most of these songs were composed during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. And actually the title Nonetheless kind of, you know, refers to the idea, you know, so despite the lockdown and the disease and all the disruptions, you know, nonetheless, they've carried on and put out an album. Also keeps up their tradition of single word album titles.
Mm-hmm.
Like it.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, here's a song called A New Bohemia.
I don't know, there's just something snobby about their music.
So European.
Yeah, it definitely is. So that song, basically, from my takeaways, he's missing the bohemian scene of London of like the 1990s. Apparently, he got the inspiration. He was walking through like a hipster neighborhood in Los Angeles, and he's like, you know, these people don't know who we are.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, they don't get me.
Yeah. So, but kind of a universal theme of kind of not being able to recapture, you know, the glory of youth.
Instead, people are like, oh, excuse me, sir, do you need help with your groceries? Can I carry you?
It's surreal that these guys are like 70, you know? Anyway, my clickbait headline for this album is Pet Shop Boys never fit in. Nonetheless, they persist.
Ooh.
The Pet Shop Boys have never completely fit in, you know, particularly I think in the United States, you know, they had their hits, you know, in the mid and late 80s. But I mean, I think they've always been a little too poppy to be part of that like EDM scene. Mm-hmm. Yet they're like too obscure, like lyrically, I think, for the pop scene. So they're just kind of lived in this sort of other space, which is, I guess that's part of their charm, you know, and maybe why so many people, you know, connect with them.
It's just so weird. The music itself is dancey and poppy, but the vocals, although very like good and strong and consistent, still sounds just as good as ever, but they're so flat and dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the balance, right? So it's not overly energetic. Yep. Maybe it balances out the music some, but...
Yeah. So, you know, I would say this album is kind of, you know, I mean, it's the typical Pet Shop Boys sound, you know, kind of, you know, electronic rhythms. Most of the orchestration on this album is actually real. Yeah, it's moody, and you've got pop songs, you know, with unusual subjects, you know, gay London, a ballet dancer, a Secret Service agent. You know, I mean, these are things that, you know, Rihanna is not singing about generally.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Well, let's hear another track. This is Dancing Star. That's what you are.
Lots of dancing on this album.
Dancing.
Yes, dancing. So that particular song pays homage to the legendary ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev, a Russian dancer that defected from the Soviet Union in the 60s. And it's well known for his technical prowess, apparently. But it's funny, it is about him, but I would have expected some classical music or ballet type flourishes in there. Yeah. This is the most techno-y song, I think, on the record. And it also kind of seems like maybe they're referring to the person listening to it who's dancing, and they're like, I'm a dancing star, you know?
So. Well, that's kind of their formula, like Don was saying. It's like, you know, this poppy dance music, but then they have these very in-depth sort of niche lyrics. It's interesting.
When I was first listening to it, I was vacuuming at the time, and I'm like, oh my God, you're a dancing star. Like, I'm vacuuming. I'm not a dancing star, but then I run into it a little bit. So my clickbait headline to describe the album, Pet Shop Boys continue to synth pop their way onto the dance floor with Nonetheless, new album packed with energetic anthems. It's the energy that's here is impressive to me. Like, they do not sound like a legacy act that's, you know, just kind of pumping out stuff for the hell of it. I feel like they are still feeling moved to create. So I enjoyed that vibe.
All right, well, let's do a little more dancing. Here's a track called Why Am I Dancing?
This is the saddest dance party I've ever heard. Yeah, that one was kind of a rough listen.
Oh, you didn't like that one?
Oh, I liked it. It's just like...
Just because it's depressing, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was between that and then the opening cut, Loneliness, for me.
Yeah. Right, I know.
I think both of those are informed by the pandemic. So I had in an interview, isolation. I had heard that he was, you know, at home and, you know, in all the, you know, the world is falling apart as we know it. And yet he's, you know, dancing to something.
Gotcha. Yeah. This record to me very much feels like kind of like, I don't say the world's kind of left them behind, but they've kind of out of step with where the world's at. And maybe part of that is just the pandemic. I mean, that kind of made everybody out of step with the world, but love that track. I really enjoyed that, the horn sample on there. And you know, that nobody does Melancholy quite as well as the boys do. I mean, and they bring it here. My clickbait headline is Pet Shop Boys still lost and lonely, but now they have excellent dental hygienist. The album art, they have like light bulbs in their mouth or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What's going on?
I was one of her Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah. The album cover is kind of, it's actually kind of cool. It makes it seem like something exciting is going on. I mean,
yeah.
When someone's smile is that bright.
It does look like they just use Crest or something, you know.
Yeah, those white strips are working.
Brushing star, I'm a brushing star.
Yeah, so, I mean, the other thing I picked up on a little bit from this record compared to their 90s output that we'd listened to a little bit, that sounded much more layered and complex and maybe shifting, I guess, in terms of the musicality of it. This seems really straightforward to me. I didn't really pick up a lot of transitions or really intricate layering of sounds. It felt like a pretty straightforward dance record.
Yeah, this album was produced by James Ford. You know, he's done a lot of, you know, Britpop stuff, Blur, and the most recent Depeche Mode and stuff. But supposedly he encouraged them to, you know, make it a little simpler. You know, I guess just focus on the melodies and, you know, not get too crazy.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's enjoyable, but for me, listening like on headphones wasn't quite as enthralling as maybe their, what was the name of that 90s record?
Behavior. Yeah, that's my favorite.
This is a better vacuuming record than Behavior was.
Yeah. I can't argue with that.
No one's ever, I'm pretty sure on any podcast or show about albums and music, I don't think anyone has made a recommendation based on vacuuming. Heard it here first.
So are you wearing headphones while you're vacuuming, or are you just playing it so loud that it?
No, headphones.
Okay. Interesting.
But you're shaking around with the unit there.
I was a dancing star with my vacuum.
Yeah.
I did want to mention one other song, just because it's kind of relevant lately. There's a song called Bullet for Narcissus, which is about a Secret Service agent who's basically
crazy.
Charged with, you know, protecting, you know, perhaps a Donald Trump-like character, you know, which
someone
is...
whose makeup is running down their face, I believe, is the
lyric. Yeah.
Yeah, that is weird. I bet they're going to get a lot of press for that, and this album might get a little more attention because of it. But it was obviously well before the incident occurred, but yeah, it's weird.
You know, I like that they choose odd topics like that, and it is something. I mean, it wouldn't just be somebody protecting Trump, but I mean, any politician, you know, you could kind of see as narcissist.
Yeah, you could apply it to any leader or any, I mean, if you're a bodyguard.
Right.
For some pop star.
Yeah.
Like you're really going to put your life on the line to protect them, but you're getting paid to do so. It's your duty.
It's your job.
Nice. Yeah. See, the, you know, the Pet Shop Boys make us think.
They do.
Okay. Well, anyway, so, you know, I think this album is, for Pet Shop Boys fans, I'm certainly pleased with it. And I think it might be a good doorway in to anybody looking out to, or, you know, looking to explore their catalog. So the album is called Nonetheless, and it's by Pet Shop Boys.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time for Deep Questions by Don. So we're more than halfway through 2024 now. What's your favorite thing about 2024 so far?
I don't know. I mean, one thing that comes to mind that was kind of a fun experience. I saw the new Furiosa movie.
Mad Max.
Oh. Yeah, the kind of prequel to Fury Road. I saw it in the D box. You guys familiar with the D box?
What's a D box? That's what I might call someone, a D-box.
Yeah, it sounds like a kind of a slur of some kind. They have this theater around here that's like these seats that shake kind of like with the action, sort of like, I don't know, Disney World has something like that, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw it was shaking and grooving me around, and I was out in the desert with...
a really angry lady named Furiosa.
Exactly. And the Hemsworth brother. So yeah, it was a good experience. I would recommend that movie if anyone's gonna check it out on DVD or whatever modern technology you might use.
Yeah. So for me, my favorite thing about 2024 so far is it's not 2020.
Yeah.
But really, I've had a good year with music, and maybe it's because we do that dig-in section at the end of the show now where we talk about new stuff, but I've really been discovering a lot more than I have previous years, so that's been awesome. Maybe because I switched back to Spotify, I'm not sure, but it's been a good year so far for music. And I moved to a bigger place, and I've got a new recording area, and so that's exciting. Yeah. 2024 for me as well.
New Album Nerds headquarter. Very, very exciting.
Yeah. Good for you. It's pretty posh.
Well, and speaking of the Album Nerds, I would say my favorite thing is the growth of this podcast. In fact, we have more downloads and more subscribers and more Instagram followers than ever before. So these are exciting times. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah.
5+ years of love and attention dumped into this thing. And yeah, it is cool to have more people listening and hopefully discovering stuff to listen to because of our goofy discussions.
Tell your friends.
Yeah. Ever since we had Don to the podcast, we've really been coming up. I don't know. I guess the secret ingredient here.
Maybe next year we'll do the year of Don instead.
Cool. Jeez, he's taking over. This is going to be called the Album Don's Doncast before you know it.
All right. What's your favorite thing about 2024 so far? Let us know on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
We knew that we wanted to make like a rock and roll record, a Saturday night record, up tempo, big riffs.
Yeah.
We're very visceral. It has to feel a certain way for us.
Indeed. So that was Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes referring to the new album Happiness Bastards, released March 15th, 2024. It's their 9th studio album. Marks their first release of new material since 2009's Before the Frost Until the Freeze. So that's a long time.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. It follows the band's 2019 reformation, where Rich and Chris Robinson got back together and they toured largely to celebrate their first album, Shake Your Moneymaker. And they played that in its entirety live. And I think that helped kind of bring back the creative spark, you know? So why don't we listen to a little bit of Bedside Manners? If you don't roll my diamonds, don't shake my tree. Yeah, you think you know what's good for me. Slide in my eyes. So there's some themes of betrayal and disillusionment and relationship stuff, but like ultimately, just hearing Chris Robinson say rock and roll-ish stuff like Shake My Tree and stuff, it's really more about the energy, the pure rock and roll vibe that Stonesy just, let's just rock. Your body kind of does the talking when Black Crowes music is on, at least mine does, where I'm moving around, I can tell that it's doing something to me, even though lyrically, for the most part, it's bits and pieces of cool phrases, but right. It's not super substantive.
Right. It's more about the blues rock and the shaking the moneymaker, essentially.
Yep. Don's glutes are in great shape after this week. My clickbait headline to describe the album, Happiness Bastards. The Robinson brothers reunite and rock harder than your family Thanksgiving fights. These guys are known for having some friction between them. They didn't speak to each other for years, but they've always had a great creative spark and a deep brotherly love, and it comes through on this record. There's also an EP released in 2022 called 1972, where they did covers of Stones, Bowie, T-Rex, Rod Stewart, The Temptations, to name a few. Huh. I think it was like a low-pressure warm-up, right. You know, to prep for a possible new studio album. And I think that those songs kind of helped inspire the sound behind this. So
cool. So were they not touring or playing together at all for those like 10 years in the 2010s?
No. Rich Robinson did his own thing. He had a solo record. Chris Robinson had multiple albums with the Chris Robinson Brotherhood.
Right, the Brotherhood, yeah.
So, yeah, they sound great. So they also had, unusual for them, they had a guest artist appear on this record, Lainey Wilson, and she's featured on the song Wilted Rose. Let's get into that.
Wainey.
Oh, no, don't start that again. Wainey Wilson.
Wilted Woes.
Greetings, music lovers. She had a
That was, for me, like the standout track on the record. A little more gospel, a little more soulful than maybe some of the harder rocking tracks. Seems to be about being betrayed by a lover. But as the dude alluded to, lyrics aren't necessarily the focus here. My clickbait headline for the Black Crowes Happiness Bastards is the Crowes still have some rock left in the tank. I was impressed. I wasn't expecting a lot from this record, knowing that they're, you know, like 30 years removed from their really pertinent work.
Heyday. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like, man, they're still really kind of like, I would say, a cut above most blues rock groups, you know, in this in this genre. They sound super relevant. So maybe it isn't like the urgency or excitement of Shake Your Money Maker, but I think the songwriting is still awesome and everything that they do is kind of just above average. So it's hard to really critique it a lot. The record's pretty lean. There's not a lot of extra crap on it. It's like, you know, barely 40 minutes, not even 40 minutes. I don't know. There's a few moments I didn't love, if I'm being honest. Like, just some weird, like, spoken words passages that kind of take me out of the moment at times. But, you know, whatever. Generally, I thought this was pretty positive, so.
Yeah, the what I liked about the Lainey Wilson guest spot is she did some harmonies. It wasn't, you know, featured. It wasn't Lainey Wilson taking over. Right. It was still the Black Crowes. And she's, like, she is right now one of the biggest artists out there. So to have her on their record and have it still be a Black Crowes song, that just, that to me says something about their place in music and the respect that they have from their fellow artists.
Yeah, I wonder if you know, her connection or if that connection came through Jay Joyce, who produced the record. I think he's traditionally a rock guy, but I think in recent years he's been focusing more in the country realm. So, you know, maybe that's what brought Lainey to the table.
Yeah, he's done like Cage the Elephant and stuff in the past, but recently Keith Urban and Carrie Underwood, Brothers Osborne. So yeah, I mean, maybe that can, oh, and yes, he did produce Lainey Wilson in the past. So,
oh, connection.
There you go.
So there we go.
Look at the big brain on Don. All right. All right. Why don't we check out another track? This one is Flesh Wound. That's the one that I, in reviews that I've read and watched, that's the song that gets bashed the most.
Yeah, I'm surprised. It stood out to me just because it, I mean, it's another kind of rocker or up-tempo track, but it just has a different sound from the others, which I like. Yeah. I don't know if that drum beat or something is kind of punk rocky, maybe more so than the others. I don't know. The lyric, it looks bad, but I'll be okay. It's just a flesh wound anyway. Kind of reminds me of the Monty Python and the Holy Grail thing.
Just a flesh wound.
Yeah, I think it's a fun sounding song, and it does deviate slightly from that blues rockiness, and it's a little more straightforward. But it's got kind of chants in it and stuff. Mm-hmm. It feels like something that could be played at a sporting event or something, but it's cool.
So my clickbait headline is Rock is Dead Crowd Forced to Eat Black Crow.
Nice. Well, that's good, Doc.
Thank you. So, I mean, you know, this is what I expected, and it delivered, I think, even better than, you know, what I expected. Mm-hmm. So it's a rock and roll record. But I do like, I mean, I guess it's mainly kind of blues, southern, classic rock, but there are elements of glam in it, and there's a little bit of punk rock in there. And it all just kind of seamlessly works. Yeah, and I mean, you would think that it would all sort of blend into each other, but somehow each song is just has a little something to it that keeps my interest. You know, it just doesn't fade into the background.
The sequencing was smart. I think they did, as they have on many of their albums, keeping that flow of bringing you up and down and changing the mood a little.
Yeah. There's a couple of ballads kind of mixed in there, you know, just to change up the pace.
And I think the Lainey Wilson track ends side one, and then side two ends with the Kindred Friend, which is also a quieter one.
Yeah.
Kind of followed that formula. I mean, it's not the most lyrically interesting album, but it's not really what I'm going to the Black Crowes for, you know.
That was kind of why I think I gravitated to listening to this so much this year, is it's just the Black Crowes being the Black Crowes. And if you like that sound, you'll like the record. It's I'd say it's in their top five. It's better than some of the stuff they're doing later in the 90s and early 2000s, in my opinion. And there are songs on here I think could be hits now, and they could get new fans.
I think that's
true. They just sound that they're you know, to quote once again the poet Huey Lewis, they've got the heart of rock and roll in their songs. It moves you, you know, in a way that I can't really describe, but I know it when I hear it.
And I am hopeful for the future, because I found that bands that kind of reunite after a long layoff, the first album back isn't always the best. It's usually like the second or third when they kind of get back into the momentum of writing together and working together. Mm-hmm. That's when the magic really happens. So,
I think those years spent touring, replaying that first record probably got them back in that place. Yeah. You know,
true.
Well, I'm glad you guys both like it, but I think we should discuss how well it vacuums.
See, this didn't need a vacuum session. I wanted to listen to this independently. I didn't listen to it while I was doing other stuff.
Okay, so you're focused for this one. I see.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think you need the headphones when you're vacuuming with this one. Just blast it.
You might not.
Yeah. The Black Crowes are back, and I think as good as ever with Happiness Bastards. So go check out the album. It's 38 minutes of pure rock and roll fun.
You bastard!
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Okay, well, we immersed ourselves in new releases. Did you have time to dig anything else, either old or new?
A little bit of both.
Oh, you know I do. Yes, I got my my clam diggers on here. A couple things in the pockets.
Those are like short pants, right? Like culottes or something.
Yeah, culottes. They're culottes, but they're cooler. The cooler culotte.
Oh,
I guess. At least they used to be. We got deep pockets though. So here we go. First one up for me as singer-songwriter record from an artist named Jesse Wells. It's new to me. He has an album out called Hell's Wells. I believe it's his debut record.
Great. Love it.
Good title, right? He's a very interesting guy. Track we're going to play here is War Isn't Murder.
Well, that's what they say when you're fighting the devil. Murder's okay.
That is not what I was expecting.
I'm intrigued.
That's very politically charged folk music, kind of like you might get back like in like the 70s or something.
Remember we did that Phil Locks record? Kind of like that?
Exactly, yeah. Very cool record. And the other one I'll mention here is a reissue, totally different, by a hip-hop artist named Ken Carson. This is a deluxe version of his 2023 album, A Great Chaos. I missed it last year, but I've been digging the reissue here with 7 new tracks. It's a bit lengthy, but I think it's pretty cool. It's kind of like a trap rap. Let's play I think this is the final cut. This is one of the new songs. This is called Overseas.
A little auto-tune going on there. But,
yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of auto-tune.
Okay.
I don't know. I keep looking for like a really definitive hip-hop album in this style. I feel like this is probably one of the better ones I've heard. It's got some big ideas. So, Ken Carson, A Great Chaos. What you been digging on, Don?
Well, an album I discovered recently, I was actually reading, you know, John Taylor, the bass player from Duran Duran, I was reading his autobiography, and he, going too far into the weeds, but anyway, he had a playlist of music that Nick Rhodes played at this club called the Rum Runner in London in like 1979 or 1980. So it's all this like glam stuff from like the 70s and 80s and like early new wave stuff. Anyway, so Mick Ronson, the guitarist, you know, Bowie's guitarist and record producer and all that, he had a solo album called Slaughter on 10th Avenue from 1974. Here's a track called Only After Dark. I was surprised because the vocals actually sounded like Bowie, so yeah. I thought he was you know, a guest on
it.
It
really does. Yeah.
I was going to say that too. I was going to say it's very Bowie-esque. Yeah. Bowie-esque.
Yep. No, that's Mick Ronson. Yeah.
I'll check it out for sure.
And then, you know, I've just been slowly spending some time with the latest album from Phish. It's actually their 16th studio album. So the album's called Evolve. Here's a track called Life Saving Gun.
Listen to this too. It's different. It's so different than their live stuff, but they're really good musicians, obviously.
I've always enjoyed Phish's albums because they stay in their lane and they just play the song. It's not 85 minutes of jam stuff, like you know.
Yeah, you don't like that part.
No.
Yeah.
I do think this album, I mean, I don't know their catalog that well, but this one kind of seems to have maybe a little more of the live energy than some of their previous ones. So that's Fish Evolve.
Cool.
Dude.
Now, admittedly, I have not listened to this album more than a couple of times, but the overall sound is very much to my liking. Common and Pete Rock with the Auditorium Volume 1 just came out. It's a blend of soulful production, introspective lyricism, paying homage to hip-hop's golden age. So there's a lot of good tracks on it. Dreaming, Fortunate, and Wise Up, but let's listen to a little bit of Dream.
This was a dream that felt real like a fight. What made it real, J Dilla was there in the light.
So this particular song, it seems to be having a dream about these artists that have passed on, and it just sounds great. Like, the production's great. Pete Rock's beats are jazzy and interesting, and I've just really been digging it. So
yeah, a little too typical or common.
Yeah,
banal.
Oh, come on. Don't go disrespecting Common. So last week we talked about David Bowie's Black Star, and I was at the record store and happened upon a copy of David Bowie's Let's Dance.
Oh.
It was $5, so it's not in the best shape. It doesn't sound great, but it's great to have, and it'll be a good placeholder for when I get a better copy.
You know, I was always curious about that one. That has like the dance moves on the album art, right? Like the steps.
Yeah.
Yep.
Does that expand at all when you open it up? Like, is there a full like cha-cha there laid out for you?
Not my copy. It's just a plain old album sleeve.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. So that Nile Rodgers production, that poppy sound that. We talked about Bowie switching things up, and this was one of those where he made a big switch, and it was a huge hit.
As he did so many times.
All right, well, what have you been digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that point on the program, and I'm reminded of the great English writer J.R.R. Tolkien, who said, "True education is a kind of never-ending story, a matter of continual beginnings, of habitual fresh starts, and persistent renewedness."
The never-ending story.
With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, to see what we'll be talking about on next week's episode.
The summer of Don continues. With that in mind, I will be choosing which albums from Don's curated list you will be exploring this summer. Next time, you will be getting funked up with Red Hot Chili Peppers' 1991 funk rock creation Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Try not to hurt yourselves.
Oh, that's sex magic. Time to go back to that filthy well.
Filthy blood and sugar. Gross. Okay. We are happy to announce Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA has been nominated for the Hall of Fame. Overwhelming support from our listening audience. So congratulations, Mr. Springsteen. And thank you to the fans for overriding my vote, essentially.
The boss made it.
These are glory days for Mr. Springsteen and the E Street Band.
That's right.
Don't forget, you can suggest topics for the Wheel of Musical Discovery on our website, albumnerds.com. We also have an ongoing vote for David Bowie's Black Star album. Does it belong in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame? You can decide. Go to our website, albumnerds.com, or cast your vote on the social medias.
All right. Well, what do you think of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magic? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you could do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time back under that hot Summer of Dawn sun.
Summertime. All right, see everybody later. Thanks for listening.
She keeps a lock of hair in her pocket. She talks to angels.
Wow. Wake up the neighbors. That's what rock and roll is all about, waking up them neighbors.